get into a managerial kind of thing. They're in charge. So now they manage everything about everybody's life and all that. And, you know, and that's what people, you know, on the material platform, we're very happy to, you know, be in charge and tell people what to do. But then if you're doing that, then you have a responsibility. And if you want to advise them on their household life and all that and all the details, then you have a responsibility to see that it's going nicely. Or if we're just an advisor, then we don't have that responsibility. We have the responsibility to see the opportunity for whatever is the best method to connect them with Krishna consciousness and make them aware of Krishna consciousness in their life. Then that is the duty. That's the responsibility. They're quite different. So in other words, all these things, let's say like GBC, regional secretaries or regional supervisors or whatever they call all these things nowadays, you know, mentors, sannyasis, preachers, they're all of them, their business is simply to give Krishna consciousness and see the opportunities for introducing a better understanding, a better practice, a better, inspiration. That's what all these positions are for. Because otherwise management, we have the temple presidents, we have the department heads, we have people like that that actually manage something tactically on a day-to-day basis. And these others, then their business is to advise, right? And so, yes, you have to use management skills within that, but we have to remember sometimes management gets overrated. That the housewife managed to get the living room vacuumed with their vacuum cleaner by getting it out, unwinding the cable, plugging it in, actually doing the things, moving the furnitures around, moving them back, putting all the pillows back in place, emptying out the thing like that. That all took management. Actual management. There are some managers who say they're managers who maybe wouldn't even be able to do that. So management, the rickshaw waller, he manages to keep air in his tires and he manages to be in the place where people are going to be at the right time. He manages to maintain his rickshaw. He manages to get people to pay the money that's worth, you know, worth his time. So this idea that management is supreme is probably can be a very distracting element within the community of Vaishnavas. You need management, just like you need to breathe, you need to drink water, you need to eat food, you need to sleep. You also need to manage. Manage simply means organizing the material energy around you so that it can be properly engaged in Krishna service. That's management. But this idea is, no, I'm in control, I tell everybody what to do. You know, I'm there, I'm micromanaging, you know, the hair on his arm is out. Hey, move it over there. Come on, get it together. This has no value or use within any society, even a materialistic society, and especially wouldn't have any value within the corporate society or administrative society like governments. So we have to be very, very clear is that these different positions doesn't mean now I'm in charge. Now I tell people what to do. No. Now you're in a position to use your influence to inspire them in Krishna consciousness. That's what the management's for. Let the temple president do the management. Does this make sense? So it's a very different approach. So the main difficulty in establishing these systems is because in the Western mindset, the manager is the top of the pile. Well, in every other culture of the world, then the top of the pile is always the people who are spiritual or more mature or have more wisdom. But that doesn't mean they manage anything. That's the other problem. So, okay, yes, the spiritual. So therefore, I'm the spiritual head. So therefore, I manage. No, you're the spiritual head. Manager's a manager. Does that make sense? So you'll see in India, all the different temples and that, you have the person who manages the temple, and you have the local sadhu or sannyasi or like this who sees to the spiritual development. So the two are cooperative things. They can be done by the same person, but it's not generally the necessarily. So if you have a sannyasi in the temple, someone else is the president, then they follow the spiritual lead of the sannyasi, though the day-to-day management is done by the president. And why is it, what are you managing? You're managing to see that Krishna consciousness is organized in such a way that it's most effective, that the maximum amount of people in the most complete way are able to be exposed to hearing and chanting about the Lord. So therefore we see is that the duty of a counselor is simply to see is at the what the opportunities to engage people and what works best in their area to engage them. Because the system that works in one place, the detail of that will not work in another place. Not maybe it won't work. It will not work. People are different. Just like, let's say, for example, the system comes from Chaupati. So in its form, there in Chaupati, so many of the devotees are like from these very professional backgrounds. Bombay is a very fast-moving city. You know, everything works, you know, on the minute. So therefore, if they have a, let's say, a counselor's meeting in a program, then they're going to come, they're going to sit down, there's going to be invocation for this much time, 7 minutes will be for, you know, this and that, the kirtan, then 10 minutes for the presentation, and then on the presentation, they'll do a rotation going around, and each person will go through, and he'll prepare for and everything, and make the presentation, then we have X amount of minutes for questions like that, then after that, it'll be this, the final thing, then there'll be prashad in this many minutes, and then at exactly this time, everybody can walk out of the door, and it runs like that, like clockwork. Because those people in their lives, they have a calendar that sits on their desk, and it's a 10-minute calendar. This 10 minutes are doing this. This 10 minutes are making this phone call. This 10 minutes are talking to this guy. So that system works perfectly for them because that's their lifestyle. Now, they brought that system to Mayapur. Bengalis don't work like that at all. You know, you start the kirtan, and he's saying that has to end in 7 minutes. Kirtan's going nice, that they want to do it for 10 minutes. You know, you're going nicely, you're giving the lecture, the response is good, it goes more, or the questions are more, you want to do like that, you take prashad, you sit and talk, and all that. So, you know, it's saying that it's got to, you know, finish in 57 minutes, it won't. It'll take an hour and a half. So, literally, the counselor system absolutely failed in Mayapur. I mean, absolutely bombed, like a lead balloon. Then they, you know, but then you look at the principle of it, that the counselor is there to have some discussions with the devotees to find out how they're doing a Krishna consciousness and all these different things like that. And then, yes, then that is the value. That is the principle of what they did at Chaupati for their people. Now you take that somewhere else, then it may work like that. You have those that have a background that's more professional, or those who, let's say, are used to a lifestyle where everybody works like clockwork, like I heard in like Japan or in Germany, you know, people stand for the train. And if the train doesn't show up on the second on the platform, people start getting nervous. And after 30 seconds, there's a riot. You know, like in India, the train shows up within 5 hours, you're good. You know, like that. So different people you have to see. So yes, you get the principle that's there. You start with the structure that you think may work in your place, because you have to start with something. But then having started, then you have to see how are people responding to it? How is it working? Because the idea is not to manage a meeting. The idea is to expose people to Krishna consciousness, have them discuss, you know, what's on their mind, what their realizations are, what their doubts are, what their misgivings are, how to apply those things into their life and correct, you know, make it work for them in their Krishna consciousness, in their particular position in Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? So that means then someone who is a counselor has to be aware of these things. They can't be like a rock or something. They need to be able to appreciate people and their mentalities and all that and see that, yes, okay, people are liking this, okay. We can do this more, that more, this or that, or, you know, this prashad is working, that prashad's not, or this time is working, that's not, this day of the week is working, this day not. It's not like, no, we make this, everyone has to follow, you're sincere, you come and do it on that day, and if you're not sincere and don't like it, then what can we do? you know, people are in Maya, you know, we got a preaching mission to, you know, do here. So the thing is it's about being personal. That doesn't mean sentimental personal. That means personal meaning being aware of people, being aware of their natures. So on the other hand, this doesn't mean that, oh, they need to be a psychologist. They got to study psychology. That's another deviation. Because modern psychology is how to inspire people to, you know, feel comfortable with enjoying their senses. So it has very minimal to do with anybody who's normal. We have to remember, Freud studied people who were crazy, not people who were normal. So therefore, then, I mean, excuse me, if anybody in the audience here has a degree in psychology or anything like that, you'll have to excuse us, but I still don't change what I'm saying. But just saying sorry. So the point is that then their idea is that somebody is uncomfortable, they're not feeling this and that, and they can inspire them so they feel, yes, I can do this, and then get out there and enjoy themselves. So you'd have to have somebody extremely mature in Krishna consciousness to see what elements can be used in Krishna consciousness and what techniques are not important. And except for one or two people, I haven't seen those people that have those degrees and then try to use it. I haven't seen it. I've seen many people leave Krishna consciousness due to their psychological instructions. But I've seen very few that actually got it together and I was able to function nicely in Krishna consciousness. So we have to understand it's not a psychological thing. It's not a managerial thing. It's a preaching thing. You know the philosophy. You practice, you have faith in it, you practice it, you try to show others to the best of your ability how they can also practice it in their life. And then in doing that, then things go nicely. And then they see how often you can, is it something once a week, twice a week, once every 2 weeks, you know, whatever is working for the people, what days of the week, you know, all these different things, what time of the day, and then work all these things out. And then, you know, so you're, in other words, it's somebody, it, so you could say it's counselor, but it's not exactly counselor. It's more of a mentor. Because the problem is this counselor, yes, it does mean that you're going to talk in that, but it doesn't always have that meaning in the modern context. Sometimes the modern context, we think counselor means it's a psychological kind of thing. Or that I'm in charge to run things. No, it's a mentor that you're guiding them. So the mentor guides. The mentor is not in charge. The mentor is an authority in the way of that they're the senior person in Krishna consciousness, or at least they're the person, the senior person in Krishna consciousness that's willing to or has a capacity to work and share that with others. While someone else may be senior, but, you know, they want to take part in the by association, but they feel uncomfortable getting, you know, involved too much with others in their lives and that. Does that make some sense? So in other words, being Krishna conscious is the qualification. Being convinced of Krishna conscious, not having any doubts about Krishna consciousness, not having any misgivings about Krishna consciousness, appreciating what Srila Prabhupada says in his books, you know, having a commitment to what Prabhupada says in his books, trying to follow and practice in your own life, Krishna, you know, what Prabhupada says in his books. And then being convinced of that and satisfied in that and happy in that, then he tries to share that with as many people are within his capacity. That's the qualifications. If you want some mundane qualifications of, you know, he's blonde and blue eyed and, you know, 7 foot tall and things like that, you know, then, sorry. You're not going to get that stuff from me. Read some Karmi book. Does this make sense? So, in other words, it's not that, oh, he has a management skill, he has this, he has that. No, that, I've seen people who have no management ability run a very nice temple. Why? Because they're so inspired in Krishna consciousness and they inspire everybody else that the people who can manage do. And I've also seen temples where someone's a really good manager, but he has not very good with people and therefore he has a very dry temple. And not very many people and no one's inspired. So the whole point is Prabhupada mentions leadership means you're inspired in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, you can inspire others in Krishna consciousness. You can't give something you don't have. You're inspired. You can inspire someone else. That's what I was saying. Back, I remember in the 70s, new bhaktas would preach. Most devotees in the 70s were made by new bhaktas. Literally, uninitiated devotees. Because they were committed, they were sincere, they were convinced, they didn't know much, but whatever they did know, that they could give to you. They were inspired, they could give you inspiration. And people joined. And then by the association of the other senior devotees in the temple, in the community, then they got serious, they took initiation, and this way then moved up. So it's conviction that makes things work. If you're convinced, people are impressed with that. You have knowledge but not convinced, nobody cares, really. People are looking for conviction. You're doing something because you like to do this. You're satisfied doing it. Why? Because their life, they're not satisfied. Does that make sense?
Yes. So conviction about and sincerity and inspiration about Krishna consciousness, that's the main qualification.
Yes. That's the main. Then accordingly, how much they can organize or this or that, you give them more or less people or a bigger or smaller area. But to say every counselor gets, 15 people, some counselors will work nicely with 10, some with 20, some can take 30, some only 5 or 6. It's how many they feel that they can be inspired about, think about, okay, this one said this, now what to do about that, and then so like that, you think about it, then the next meeting, then you discuss things, and you have ideas on how they can improve their Krishna consciousness. So it's very individual. You can start off with a general idea. Yes, they should ideally be able to take this many people. Like in the Vedic thing, you have a gurukul, a Brahmin on his own, because Brahmins aren't necessarily known for having an organizational skills or a lot of facility. It's just the Brahmin and his wife. So then they would take 12 kids. And that was generally the limit. Don't take more than 12. You see, some gurus had 2 or 3 disciples. And you have things like Vishwamitra and Vishishta Muni and Durvasa Muni. They had 10,000 disciples. Right? Because they know how to organize and all that. Prabhupada said, the guru teaches the senior disciples, they teach the next group down, they teach the next group like that, 10,000, no problem. So you have to see the individual ability. Also, what kind of people they're good at working with. Someone works better with older, some with younger, some with, different kinds of natures and all this and that. And so you don't want to get mental about it, but it's a natural thing. So who gravitates towards who? Then that's there. It means you generally, let's say if you start off dividing it up by area. Okay. You divide it up by area in the city because that's easier. People in one area can come together. But you might find somebody from one area prefers what's going on in another. So if they can get over there, great, go. So this whole thing is no, they're my counselee and it's not a matter of ownership. It's a matter of what works. So those who work the best with these things and all that, then that works nice. But if you have all these counselors, you have to have somebody above them, the counselors, that's seeing that the counselors are being Krishna conscious. And to work with the counselors on how do you deal with a person like this or that, or this situation came up, what should I do? So the counselors themselves can meet together with this lead person. The lead person can discuss with them. So in other words, it's that principle. Whoever's overseeing the thing, he's seeing that the counselors are doing well. And then the counselors are seeing that their local people are doing well. And you might find, so you don't get out of touch, is that counselor who's overseeing the whole thing, he should also have a group that he's counseling. You see, the Romans would have that. It means you have a group of 10 people, in the army, one guy was in charge. Then you take 10 of those groups, right? Now, each one of those is in charge of their group of 10 people. But of those 10 in charges, one of those was overseeing all those 10 groups. Plus his own, he'd watch his own group as one of them. And he'd also then see that the other 9 groups, their leaders knew what they were doing. Then it would go up there and be bigger than that. So everybody always had their feet on the ground. Otherwise, if you just sit in an office and make plans, sometimes they're great plans and sometimes they're a little out of touch with reality. Does that make sense? So they have to be dealing with somebody. They can't just be sitting in an office. Does that make some sense?
Definitely.
How is you have the guru, disciple, and then the council system? Is it the what is the
means?
Means
everybody is preaching. Everybody's associating. The guru is ultimately responsible. You have Haridas Thakur explains that when you're dealing with, because we're talking about siksha, you know, siksha or instruction. So he mentions that there's three levels of siksha instruction, right? So the top level is the Adi Guru, the founder Acharya. So the founder Acharya, his teachings are which everybody else, the other two levels are discussing. So then of those two levels there, then you're going to, yeah. So his point that he's making is whether it's the second or the third level, it's not their instructions. They're giving relevant instructions based on the instructions of the founder Acharya. So relevant means, let's say an individual as a preacher is making Srila Prabhupada's instructions relevant for them in their situation. So that's what all preachers within Prabhupada's society are doing. It's never their instructions. It's Prabhupada's instructions. And so then they're in a position to, give. It may be their disciple, means a diksha disciple by Pancharatra, but we have to remember that siksha is more important than diksha. Right? So this, then the founder Acharya, Prabhupada's given the instructions. He has his books. He has this example that he's set. And then we follow that. So now these two levels of preachers, then they are, giving those instructions. Now of these two, then the second level, then we would call that the Sadguru. So Sadguru means you're taking a commitment of an eternal relationship with somebody. So that then will have Diksha and Siksha. So Diksha Guru, then, that's obvious for us that the Diksha Guru is given initiation, there's an eternal relationship, and he's responsible for the disciple. But you also have individuals in that devotee's life who are not as Diksha Guru, but have that same kind of standing in their life of that of an eternal relationship, so therefore that kind of responsibility to see if they go back to Godhead. So there's naturally a cooperation between the Siksha and Diksha Gurus. And that will be limited. You have one Diksha Guru, and you may have, a few of these Siksha Gurus that are on this level, one or a few, like that. The third level is called the preachers. So that means any senior devotee in Krishna consciousness, whatever their position, that they are preaching Krishna consciousness to you. So these three always exist. Sometimes we get a little distracted by, the Diksha Guru is all there is. But that's basically unfortunately a distraction that the neophytes tend to fall prey to. They can only see their Diksha Guru. They don't really see Prabhupada's instructions. They don't see anybody else in the temple or yatra as senior. It's only their guru. That's all that matters. And now as a starting place, that's fine. That you have a strong relationship. You have a good relationship. That's good. See that it's based on your understanding and knowledge and practice and not just sentiment. But at the same time, as we have to understand is that when we say, they're disciples, but the point is the guru, the Diksha, the guru is only part of the whole seed, the whole Sankirtan movement. The whole idea is that people on a daily basis should be exposed to Krishna consciousness. Now, if you have the Diksha Guru themselves living and staying in a particular place, yes, they may be much more prominent in giving all these directions and this and that. But at the same time, it's not that they're getting involved in the lives of everybody in the yatra. who's going to be able to do that? Why would you do that? That's what Prabhupada said. You teach the senior ones, they teach the next ones down. So in this case, then in this formula, then it would, even if they're there, they would be the ones overseeing, seeing the, the counselors, or they would be this overseeing the person who is overseeing the counselors, and the counselors are saying to the yatra. But it doesn't mean they don't give class to the yatra and things like that. They don't go to programs. So this idea is that, he's the only one and that's it. But the point is how, when's the last time he was at the temple? Everybody, may have a guru, but when was the last time they were there at your temple? How long do they stay? How many days is that per year? So therefore, that's why the association of the preachers and that is very important. And without that, how things will be nourished? Yes, you're following the instruction of the guru. And then these other devotees see that you're following the order of your guru very nicely. So there's no contradiction in this. That's the whole point, is that when we see this means this is a culture, this is a society. But when it's only who's in charge and he's the guru and stuff like that, this is not a social system. This is a managerial hierarchy. And then it creates problems because it's not deep enough. It's not personal enough. It's not accommodating enough to all the different devotees and all what they're involved in. So one has to be able to, if you want to develop a community, then you have to accept everybody as devotees and they're all part of that community. Because when we say community development, one of the things that always gets divides up is that there's community and there's temple. But the point is the temple is part of the community. So that means the brahmacharis and the temple are also part of the community. This whole idea is us and them. There's the temple and the community. That zone will never develop. They won't have community. And say it as it is, everyone's talking community. Oh, we don't need temples anymore. We have communities. I've been hearing this stuff for the last 10 years. How many communities are there? Go ahead, knock me out. Chaupati. And then there's Wada, which is connected with Chaupati. There's Pune, which is connected with Chaupati. There's Nasik, which is connected with Chaupati. There's a few other temples around there and zones and that are connected with Chaupati, and I think that may be about it. Did I miss any of them? So in other words, when we use this managerial hierarchy as our template for organizing everything, in that we will fail because it's Krishna consciousness that has to be organized, not schedules and this and that. We have to organize. We have to have managers. And Prabhupada was very serious about that. And he expected people to respect and follow the managers. But the managers were preaching Krishna consciousness. They were the leading siksha gurus in an area. But just to be a manager and you sit in your office and you've got a computer and you know how to use the apps on the computer, whoopee. Every guy at IIT knows how to do that, and he can probably do it 10 times better. So what is that? It means it's a tool to use. That's like saying, I'm a better cook because I got better pots and pans. I got a bigger kitchen. I got 20 pans. You only got 10 pans in your kitchen. So therefore, I'm twice as good a cook as you. It's that foolish. One has to understand Krishna consciousness stands on its own. Even if it's not organized, if you're discussing Krishna consciousness, it will prosper. And if you organize so well, but it's not about Krishna, Krishna's not the center, then yes, you will have more deities in your temple than devotees. And of course, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, Srila Prabhupada, like that. They're all devotees, so yes, it's not a problem. We have devotees in the temple, but yes, please.
So the basic principle is, like you also mentioned yesterday, just sadhusanga, exposing people to Krishna Conscious Association, and so taking time for individuals, caring for them, seeing where they're at, and then giving them the instructions of Srila Prabhupada that are applicable for them right here, right now, so that they can make progress. That's the basic principle of counseling.
That's the basic principle. Then you try that, then you'll see who can do what, who's like this and that. So basically, if anybody's been around, they can help with somebody else. Right? And it's just a matter who's more qualified, who's more convinced, who's better, and then they take a broader range of people.
So if we artificially try to import and implement some system that might work good for example, Chaupati Keep, it will not necessarily work here.
But if not, we just in apply the detail. Not in the detail. In the people, principle. It's just like, let's say, how the rules that you use to drive on your roads there in Denmark. Can you follow those rules in London?
Some of them.
Yeah, some of them. But what happens if you use the main ones?
Yeah, then we have a problem.
Yes. So that's the whole thing, is that different people in different, if you call community, community means individuals. It's a group of individuals in one area are going to be different. Otherwise, why are people born in different parts of the world? Right? Because they have different natures. Like, I remember as a kid, being from the West Coast in America, then, you know, we heard stories about and this and that about New York and the scene like that. There'd be readings about that, you know, in seventh, eighth, ninth grade where you do all those kind of stuff, you know, like that. And to me, when I first visited there on the way to India in 74, coming into New York, it was hell, literally. I thought it was the most hellish place that I'd ever been to. And I haven't even bumped into people. I'm just seeing the place. It was terrible. The energy that it had, everything like that, I thought it was terrible. I would never consider it. Then I went to India. And then in India, basically all the leading devotees were everybody from New York, because New York was the first place. So it generated so many devotees, and they went out and preached around the world. Then hanging out with those devotees and all that, and that energy level and everything like that. Then when I went back and visited and stayed there in 79, you know, that would have been some years later, then I was comfortable with the place. So you have to see is that at different places, different things will work. The basic principle, when Prabhupada was here, each temple had the same basic kind of template and everything, but at the same time, is how they went about it was different. Each temple president was unique. They were known. The temple presidents were known by, you know, Bhakta Das was like this, and then Korandar was like that, and then you had Bali Mardan, you know, and this and that. They were known because they were all had their unique styles and that, but it was all based on Krishna consciousness giving Prabhupada's instructions. And so they, you know, they everyone had Mangalarti, Guru Pooj, this, that. Everyone cleaned the temple. Everyone took prasad. So that's the thing about the Vedic that's not understood. It's a set of rules, but at the same time, it's very individual in implying them. But this thing is, no, my individuality is first. Then we look at the rules. No, we look at the rules. Then we see our individuality. Right? See, is that Srila Prabhupada is explaining in the teachings of Queen Kunti that a common mistake is people think religion is a matter of faith. But religion is the laws of Krishna, the laws of God. So someone who's religious follows the laws of God. Someone who's irreligious doesn't follow the laws of God. That kind of puts things in a different context, no? You accept how Krishna says the material world works and follow the laws governing that. That's a religious person. Now we understand the Krishna conscious philosophy. And so now we understand that that's all coming from Krishna and the whole purpose is to please Krishna. Then that makes the Vaishnava. That's the Vaishnava philosophy. Therefore, the Vedic lifestyle for the Vaishnava and for the Smarta and for the Shaivite and the Shakta, it's all the same. Because they all follow the Vedic. They all follow the laws of God. But it's just a matter, are they doing it for devotion? Or are they doing it for karma? Or are they doing it for jnana? So a lot of times this thing, that's the whole point, is that following these different rules, we were saying, as we were saying yesterday, the Hindus have a tendency to be aware of these laws and be a little bit more willing to follow them. But it doesn't mean that their philosophy is something that we would consider very valuable. But, you know, it's all one and it doesn't matter and everybody is everybody else. I am you and you are me and we're all together and all that kind of jazz. So that kind of thing is, you know, that's where it kind of breaks down. As we said, they have the religion, but not the philosophy. But they themselves don't necessarily understand the laws. And so that's why you see is they may follow something their parents followed more, you know, than their children, you know, it's less. You know, basically, you know, you give it if it hasn't already happened, otherwise you give it a generation or two and you'll see that the Indian kids that are there are going to be just as Danish as everybody else. Right. So the whole point is that you have to understand it's laws. So one is following those laws. That's religion. And so therefore those laws are there. And everybody, every temple, every devotee is following them. But being an individual, then somebody will emphasize this part more, that part more. Like I remember, I think it was in Australia and I think in New York, they always on the Sunday program, you know, back in the 70s, used to have a drama. Because the devotees there were cool about drama. And so they would just, you know, a few days before, the day before, or even on the day, they say, okay, what are we going to do? And then different people, because everyone knows the stories, so everyone would take a different part. You know, someone was Nrisingadev, someone's Hiranyakashipu, someone's Prahlad Maharaj, and they just go with it. Some places they practiced more, some even had, you know, a drama troupe where they seriously did things. And other places they didn't relate to, they didn't do that at all. So you just have to see, like if you're in South India, you can talk, you know, Vedanta philosophy for 2 hours straight. Man, woman, and child will be there peacefully sitting and listening, but no problem. North India, you tried that and in about 3 minutes, everyone would be bored and falling asleep. So therefore, they tell stories. And halfway through the story, they still fall asleep. So then they have a kirtan to wake everyone up. Right? And then Bengal is in between. They like the philosophy, but it nicely presented and very personal. They like the kirtan. You know, Bengal, you're going to have much more complex tunes. North, you have to have simple tunes. So it's different from place to place. Does that make sense? It's within the rules, but it's individual. But you're starting with the laws of God. Then you're applying the individuality. While the modern approach is, I am an individual. I am who I am. And therefore, you know, I do things according to my whim. And then you end up with chaos because you don't have community because there's no common laws. And at the same time, there's no one satisfied because they're not following Krishna's laws, how they'll be happy. Yes, please.
Sorry, Maharaj. May I give an example related to what you've been saying? Because in London, they started that same thing. They took the Chaupati model and started it back in 2008. And very quickly, they realized that it wasn't working. So they changed it, adapted it. And they also found that different groups of devotees, different things work for them. You couldn't do the same with every group. Mm-hmm. Because if the groups were of a similar nature, then they had to adapt to on their own group. But then a few years ago, Bhaktivedanta Mana was able to take that and adapt it because they're also in London. So the same thing worked.
Yes. So whatever we're talking about, Soho started that.
Yeah, Soho started.
And then the Manor adapted it. Yeah. And you probably find that with a little bit of adjustment, you could apply it in Leicester or in mm-hmm. you know, Manchester and Scornthorpe, I'm not sure, but you know, yeah. Is that, yes, very good point. Does that make sense? So in other words, you may start with the model because it's a very nice model and it works very well in their place. But then you have to be aware that as you apply it, you see how it works and you start adjusting. You know, if it works, great. And if it doesn't, what parts don't work, you have to start adjusting till they do work. That's leadership, right? That's management. You're able to take it and adjust to what's going on the ground now at present. That's the whole point. We're just talking, oh, it should be this, or they did like this. Then you're only dealing with past and future. You're not dealing in the present. Present is the mode of goodness. So then you get effect. Those people in the world that are successful, they're able to apply themselves, their knowledge, their skills, their energy in the present. That's what makes them successful. You know, that's what does. If they're thinking, oh, it should be like this, and oh, if it was like that, it would be, they're never successful. So it's always about who is able to see in the present how it works. But it's not speculative. It's not whimsical. It's that you know what the goal is, because we said we have Krishna's laws, we have the religion, we have the philosophy. Then you go to try to apply it. And in applying it, you see what works for the devotees. Okay, you know, let's say, you know, like you said, they have a 10-minute presentation. You might find that it only works for the 5-minute, or you need a 20-minute. You know, that's what I'm talking about, detail. But the principle that you're hearing and chanting about Krishna, discussing about Krishna, associating with devotees and taking prasad, that's not going to change from one sangha to another everywhere on the planet. It works everywhere. Like there was a time back, when was that? I think in the 90s, when there was this whole thing is, oh, you know, we shouldn't go out in Harinam, you know, we you know, it looks bad, people won't like us and all that, and all the, we shouldn't wear dhotis. So then there was this whole thing is, oh, we pulled back from that, we don't do all that things, you know, do all those things on the street and all that. And, you know, we've tried to be more sophisticated in that, be in our home, no one sees us, no one knows who we are, doesn't even know, you know, what's going on. Like that, and so, and somehow or another, that's somehow or another an improvement. But in any case, so then somehow or another, you know, the glasnost, then Russia opened up. And immediately they started doing the Hari Nams, they started doing the book distribution, the things, everyone wearing dhotis, everyone, you know, following the temple program, having a guru, surrendering to guru, taking initiation, everything like that. It worked like a charm. Within a very short time, they had like 100 temples. Then the senior devotees were going, wow, what's going on here? You know, what happened? What are they doing that's so successful? Because we haven't gotten devotees for years. Like you got Bhakta Jose, you know, every temple president knows him in America. And he's been around for the last, you know, 12, 15 years. And each temple president can tell you stories about Bhakta Jose. Right? Been to every temple, you know, never takes initiation, but you know, he works nicely in that. He's a nice guy. So therefore he's welcome everywhere. Right? And so then they sent a senior devotee, you know, to go to Russia and analyze what's going on. And he did. He went there and spent some time. They came back. And when he gave his presentation, he was saying, amazingly, they all value following the guru. The guru gives some direction. There's a structure. You do it. You follow the traditional things. They go out on Harinam. They do book distribution, all this. And that's what's working. So the very things that the others said, oh, this won't work. You know, we're too sophisticated. We're too modern. You know, it's Kali Yuga. We can't follow all these things, even though this is the Yuga Dharma and established by Lord Chaitanya in Yuga Dharma, in the Kali Yuga. But whatever, you know, we're always more intelligent. And so they saw is that the system works. Any place you take it and apply it, it works. Because it's Krishna's laws. It's eternal. It always works. That's the whole point. So one has to have faith in that the Krishna conscious process means the 9 processes of devotion work. And of them, hearing is most important. Why? Because if you hear from the right source, then you know how to properly perform those other aspects of Krishna consciousness. And if you hear from the wrong source, you know, from these, you know, you have so many, you know, bogus Indian gurus and this and that and yogis and all that, then you won't know how to perform devotional service. So you have to hear from the right source. So having heard, then now you practice Krishna consciousness. That's then, you know, what you're looking at. So it is something that will always work at all times, all places, all circumstances. You just have to be intelligent enough to be aware how to catch these people. And to say is, okay, once I figured it out, then now that gets fixed. No, it still may adjust. Principles will always be there. That's why we say we start with the laws of God. That's the principles. They always work. then the detail we see. Right? Just like I remember they started one group also, I think it was in London, you know, of young people and all that. They'd get together and all this and have their programs and very fired up and they'd do this and that and this and that. And, you know, they were all like, you know, high school students, college students, this and that. And they got inspired and they stuck around. And then I remember going to programs, you know, every couple of years and that. And then I noticed the audience there in the 20s, late 20s, then in the 30s. But so they worked out what worked for them at that mentality at that time. But then it didn't adjust. So then they had problem. They didn't have young people. Right. And so, because that's why they started. But they were able to figure out for the young people at that time what worked. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like people who are, you know, 60 years old, 70 years old, you know, in their mind, they're still going to listen to Pink Floyd and the Beatles and the Grateful Dead. You know, they probably won't be listening to 6ix9ine, you know, or Mickey, Nicki Minaj, is that it? Yeah. You know, so they're not going to be doing that.
Now what they've done is figured that out. So the older lot that you used to speak to are now the Pandava Sena alumni, and they've continued the Pandava Sena but changed the rules for the younger group.
Yes. Yeah, so then the younger group's there, and then they can come in as kind of like mentors or have their own sangha.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. They figured out at some point something's not working here. Why is it everybody in this room is all married and, you know, is already well established in their jobs and lifestyles and business and, you know, they're all in their 30s, you know. So then like that, then they figured out and then they went back to the roots and then made it work for the next generation and then they let it go on. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole thing is you have to see is that the mentorship comes up. So that therefore, if you have young people coming up in a family, you know, you're mentoring a particular group of families, their kids are there. As the kids grow up, you might have to have a different group for them to mentor. A mentor for those teenagers or those college people. Not that, oh, I'm the mentor for these families, so everybody in this family's got to come to. No, it doesn't work like that. You know, I mean, one person got away with it. You know, I am the way, I am the light, I am the truth. But other than that, we kind of have to avoid trying to be that person. Does that make sense? We're giving relevant instructions of the founder Acharya. We ourselves are not the way, we are not the light, we are not the truth. We have to understand that. Is that okay? I hope that didn't offend any of those from particular Abrahamic backgrounds or anything.
I think everyone is very inspired still. Like no emotional outbursts.
Okay, nobody's gotten up and walked out yet.
No.
Okay.
I don't know if it's happening online, but not in some
No, because yesterday I noticed a few people were leaving. You know, we'd make some points and then suddenly you'd see they'd leave. So, they might have had something to do or they went to the bathroom. So, you know, who knows?
But nobody left because of what was said. Nobody left because of what was said. I know that.
Okay. That's good. That's good. I would just always find it kind of humorous that I'd make some very point like that. And then at that point, someone would leave. But it may be, like you said, there's something else like that. But it was just funny. So, because it's that Vidura makes the point is that these elements, then appreciating it, they're like medicine. You know, they're the bhavo shodhi. They're the medicine for material disease of conditioned identity. And so then appreciating that, then if that's appreciated, then you can go very nicely and very personally into all the different aspects and make it very, very, you know, pleasant. But the point is that the Krishna consciousness is what it is. You know, Krishna is who he is. And since everything comes from him, he's created everything. Therefore, it acts as he said it acts. This idea is that, oh, it's Kali Yuga. We can't follow all those. Yeah, you could do that. You know, maybe when Lord Chaitanya was here, or, yeah, when Prabhupada was here, or yeah, you could do that back in the 60s, but you can't now. And who's saying that? People from the 60s. And they still live the same lifestyle. Of course, it's purified. You know, they wash their hands after they go to the bathroom. Right? So therefore, we have to see is that we don't get into that mentality that Krishna is eternal. His laws are eternal. It's still eating, sleeping, mating, defending is still just as much a distraction today as it was 100 years ago or 500 years ago or 5,000 years ago or trillions of years. On the first day of Brahma, it was still the distraction. You know, it always is. Lust, anger, greed, envy, illusion, oh, these are still there. People being distracted by karma and gyan. There isn't something else on the material platform other than karma and gyan. I want to enjoy, or I'm so frustrated, so I just want everything to be nothing. You know, it's just like, let's say somebody's doing something and they get frustrated. The tendency that they might do is break things. Have you never seen like those tennis guys? They're out there, they're doing their shots, all these professionals like that. And then something goes wrong and they take their racket and smash it on the ground. You know, what did the racket do? You know, the racket would sit in their bag. So the point is it's their hand that made the mistake. Why don't they go, you know, punch their hand in a wall or something? So the point is this destruction, because we're in illusion. Therefore, then the solution is all in ignorance. Therefore, the solution is also ignorance, which means destructive. So we have to be able to see is that this destructive element, that's not the inspired. Krishna is always there. It's always at present. The present is controlled by Krishna. The results of your previous activities are coming at present, controlled by Krishna. At what you're doing at present, that will affect what you do in the future, but that's being determined at present. So that's that the point is Krishna is always relevant. It's his creation. He manages it. Maya is his representative. She still manages it in the same way. It doesn't matter who you are. It's the same thing. I mean, it's just like if we change it. You know, I give this example many times. You know, you've read the Orwell book on 1984, right? You know, like that, or Animal Farm. Right? I think that was somebody else. So then the point is then you end up with pigs in suits. So the whole thing is the same thing over and over again. The laws of nature, the modes of nature are still the same. It doesn't matter if you're a devotee or not a devotee, it's the same modes. Devotees, because their absorption in Krishna and following things to please Krishna are unaffected. But if you take the mode seriously, they will affect you like they do everybody else. So that's the whole point. Krishna, Srila Prabhupada, is giving us direction on how we can act in our life so that we engage our conditioned nature, you know, and we're satisfied in that way. But at the same time as we're above the modes, we're not affected by the modes. And that takes knowledge, that takes practice, that takes association. But it's something that every living entity can do, at least in the human form, right? Dogs don't necessarily, but even dogs associate, like devotees take prasad. Like in Australia, they had a dog on the farm called Hari Rama. Every Mangalartik, he was there at Mangalartik. You know, as a dog, he couldn't come into the temple, but they had a unique temple that it was like an A-frame, you know, where you have the straight walls like this. There's no real walls. And the sides were glass, so from outside you could see in. So he'd be standing out there every morning at Mangalartik, and he'd even like with his feet move back a little bit, move forward, move back. You know, he'd dance a little bit, so on dog dance every day until he died. So yes, that dog will probably go back to Godhead, or at least be born in a very nice devotee family or something. You know. Done so much nice service. You know,
all right.
Who knows? Might become Indra.
If I may, now that you're touching upon the modes of nature, I was wondering about that in regards to counseling. Now you spoke about the qualifications being like conviction and inspiration about Krishna consciousness. How much is it the role of the counselor and the mentor to show people a lifestyle in the mode of goodness and to help them to situate themselves according to Varnam Ashram?
Yes. See, as Varna and Ashram is religion, right? So that they're synonyms. So religion, Varna Ashram, you know, the proper performance of one's duties. These are the same things. You're just bringing out different aspects of it. You know, if I say it's a vehicle, I mean that it's something that moves and carries things, right? If I say it's a car, then that means it's a particular size like that. You know, if I say it's my wheels, then, you know, I'm talking about, you know, the particular aspects of, street credit. Right? It's still the same thing. It doesn't change. So point is we follow the Vaishnava understanding of the Vedic literatures as given in the Srimad Bhagavatam down through our Sampradaya as given to us through Lord Chaitanya and the six Goswamis. And then Srila Prabhupada's revealed that so that we can appreciate it. And our religion is actually Varnashram. It's the Vedic system. We follow that. So it's the system that all the other aspects of studying and brahmacharya and giving in charity and everything is all discussed within Varnashram. So within that, all the aspects, other aspects of dharma or religion, which Prahlad Maharaji mentions, I think there's 12 or 18 different places. They list different numbers. It's just a matter of whether they're giving more detail or more general descriptions. And so for us, that's just our religion. And so, of course, then it comes down because people don't accept the religion. They speculate, oh, do we need to follow Varnashram? It doesn't work in this age. And so following a Western Malecha lifestyle is working for everybody. It's created community. Families are together, like we heard yesterday, 70% divorce rates. You know, and that's, you know. And so how is that? And so that's our religion. So if we're Vaishnava by philosophy and then Protestant by religion. Because Protestant means I accept God, but we don't need organizations. We don't need priests. We don't need saints. We don't need any places of worship. In fact, they should just be very simple. I can worship anywhere. I can approach God directly. Of course, you can do all that. But at the same time, it's not that there's not a parampara and not that you can't do nice things for God. So that's the Protestant aspect. So is that what it is now? Oh, we don't need temples. We just need communities. You know, we don't need all these senior things. We just approach ourselves. You understand? You see what happens is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out that the living entity in the conditioned state has to have religion, right? Because he doesn't have his original sad-dharma of just serving Krishna according to his particular rasa, right? So therefore, he has to have religion. So you either follow religion, or if you don't follow religion, you will make up religion. So we see people do that. And then the religion they make up, that is like, you know, written in stone. But what the acharyas give and what's there in the shastras, oh, that's up for discussion. You know, we're just being practical and, you know, we're not fanatic and like that. So the Varnashram is our system, but the point being Daiva Varnashram, it just defines where you situate yourself to engage yourself in Krishna's service. Right? It's not about that, you know, one's doing brahminical duties, you're a Brahmin, or a Vaishya duties, you're a Vaishya. It's just like we're doing brahmachari, we're not a brahmachari, but those are our duties. We're devotees. Someone's a grihastha, someone's a brahmachari, vanaprastha, sannyas. So that's an important thing to understand. It's not about who's in control, you know, who's in control of the men and money. It's a matter of what is the best way to engage yourself in your position in Krishna's service. So it's just practical. It's personal. So by rejecting the Varnashram system, it becomes impersonal. And then everybody has to follow this modern kind of so-called educated, you know, kind of general, you know, thing of, you know, where everybody just, you know, does what they feel like and it's all good. That means then there's no rules at all, no standards. We're not taking God's laws as that. So it's not religion, it's irreligion. It's how best we can break, you know, it's just like if there's a doubt, okay, you know, what are the temple presidents doing? What are the GBCs? What are the, you know, gurus? What are the sannyasis doing like this? We don't need any of that. We just need, you know, like I said, Protestant. So the point is these things are there because that's what works. And Krishna himself, he follows religion. He follows it. Because otherwise, how do you express your devotion? If you have devotion for Krishna, how do you express it? By doing some service, right? You hear about him, chant about him, come clean the temple, you know, make money, give that to Krishna, dress the deities, do kirtan, go out, do book distribution, you know, take prasad. But these are ways to express devotion. Without them, how do you express? Oh yes, it's in your heart. It's in my heart. Krishna knows. Okay, great. He knows. Then what about expressing it? It's just like, does that work at home? You know, the husband, yeah, I never tell my wife that I love her. You know, like that. She knows. I don't have to say. Can any husband say that and get away with it? No. So the point is relationships means you express it. You're constantly expressing it. So the cowherd boys are constantly expressing their love for Krishna through activities. Mother Yashoda is constantly doing that. The gopis, the cows, the trees, everybody is expressing it. So therefore, how do we know that our expression is pleasing to Krishna? You know, because we don't know Krishna, so we have to follow those who do know Krishna. Krishna gives the laws and his associates, and they show us how to apply that to please Krishna as a person. Because it's about Krishna as a person, not because he's God. He is God, but that's not our drive. Our drive is that Krishna is the most nice person. That's Braja. Vaikuntha is, he's God, but Braja is, no, he's the nicest person. So then how do we know unless we follow the directions given by the acharyas? Otherwise, we don't know. Right?
That's illness. They've shown us, you know, what to do. So we should follow their direction. Maharaj, the sound
is not coming.
Now it's coming again.
Just one second.
Back, Marge. Just your earphone didn't swap over.
Okay, let me just 1 second. I try to find. Okay, Bluetooth on, not connected. Okay.
Marge, we can hear you now.
Okay, yeah, because that was just that sometimes the ear pod connects, sometimes it doesn't. You know, it's they seem to be very random.
It just took a slight longer.
Yeah, well, I put it in my ear, but after 5 minutes, it still hadn't connected. I had to go there and manually do it. But normally, it connects on its own. But today, it didn't want to. Being independent. So, therefore, Varnashram is the structure on which all the other religious elements, and we hang that. It's not the most important, but it's the structure that all the, especially we're talking community. Without Varnashram, you do not have community. It means that everyone's going to be just around hearing and chanting and all that. We're all Paramahamsas. Great. Like that. But then the point is then there's common values for that. And everybody's just hearing and chanting and all that. So you have to see is that Prabhupada introduced the Varnashram system because devotees needed that broader range to accommodate their particular condition needs. The Bhagavat is just hearing and chanting. There is no other needs than that. That's the only need of the devotee on the liberated platform. But if you're not liberated, then you have to follow the Pancharatrik platform. The Pancharatrik means it all centers around the deity. And then from that, everything else is there. All the hearing, chanting, the preaching, all the things like that. And you have the, during the day, you work in your occupation. If it's connected with the deities, great. And if it's not, then it's indirect. You get your money, you maintain yourself, you take part in the deity worship. But when it gets into things bigger than that, then you see then Varnashram. So in the temples before, he started with the Bhagavat. When that, then in the 80s, and he introduced the Pancharatrik thing. The temples ran by that, but he saw it's still a problem. So then he started the farms and things like that so that devotees could start to catch the Varnashram aspect, because they weren't catching it in the cities. They weren't catching it in that communities. Unless you train them, how will they know? So that's the thing, is if officially we don't accept Varnashram, then we won't have, then officially they should not try for communities. They go together. You know, that's like saying we're, you know, yes, we need to cook a meal and all that, but you know, all these pots and pans are archaic and that. That's what people used to, Neanderthal used to cook in a pot. So we're modern man. We don't cook in pots. So we don't need to cook in pots. So then what are you going to cook in? You know, so that's the thing. So you end up eating sandwiches. And most, not necessarily everybody makes a great sandwich.
Maharaj, thank you so much for clarifying that. Tapas Prabhu, you have written down a question. Maybe you would like to ask that now?
All right, I have to find it. Ooh. Yeah. So, regarding developing communities, so developing communities within ISKCON also includes developing communities which are somewhere or another cooperating with other ISKCON communities, bigger community, you might say. So, the issue relates to three Srila Prabhupada's visions. One, principle of cooperation. And two, unity and variety. So cooperation and unity and variety. So that's more about the unity. And three, that let every place develop according to their own creative ability. So that's the variety.
Yes.
So my observation over the years that this can go initially when everybody lived in ashram and so on, the acharya system and that the unity was more prominent in the first stage, and now that ISKCON is more congregational communities, also with temples, but it's very much congregational communities, that the variety becomes more prominent or more necessary to emphasize. So I have been preaching in both situations in the 80s, 90s, and also since 2000 in the congregational cultivation. So, and my experience, it takes a village to foster a child, but not a kingdom. So in other words, having, what do you say, seen a necessity to be, what to say, a little more taking care of the local community. So there has sometimes been questioning, maybe from persons who were used to the more living in the previous, that why you're not cooperating, why you have your own festival, why force new devotees, let them choose themselves where they want to be. Now the Yatra is not united, everyone sits as a ruler on his own hill. So the question is how to balance unity and variety in terms of local communities and the bigger community of ISKCON, like the Yatra, or even bigger than that. So that in which way is the unity in the bigger ISKCON important for the devotee's spiritual progress, and in which way the variety and the local focus is more important.
Yes. So, go ahead. Sorry.
I'm ready.
So basically you have, as we see, or as he mentions, the laws of Krishna is given to us by Srila Prabhupada, you know, the instructions of Prabhupada, the instructions coming down from Rupa Goswami, from Lord Chaitanya. So that is the common value. That's the point on which everybody's cooperating. Then the individuals, how they're developing, how they're working and all that. And will be the variety. See, as we mentioned before, like in the 60s, 70s, there'd be more commonality because there was the same values. But otherwise, as I saw, every temple you went to, it was unique and different. But they had the same core values. Well, now, is it the same core values? Is it about pure Krishna? Is pure Krishna consciousness? Is pure devotion the common value? If that's the common value, then you can work together to attain that. So this thing is you have to do everything together, and that's cooperation. No, cooperation means, if there are things that are common between us, we may try to do those together, but where there's difference, we don't have to make those common. You know, it's just like to have community, do we all have to go to the toilet at the same time? You know? And in fact, you know, we'll just put all the toilets in a line with glass windows. Well, actually, we'll put them in a circle with glass windows in between and that, and then everybody can see everybody else. We're all going to the toilet together and, you know, like this. And that's community and all that. So the point is that we are individuals. So, yes, there's going to be differences, but at the same time, as the core values are the same. So, you know, for us, the Bhagavat, the hearing and chanting the holy name, the Pancharatrik, the, you know, things are on time and they're clean and they're centered around Krishna. And then the Varnashram, you're conditioning as directed by the Lord, seeing how to connect that back to Krishna. So these core values and that, then everybody can have. We're all servants of Krishna. Chanting is the process, and developing love for God is the ultimate goal. So all that can be common amongst everybody. So it doesn't matter if you're living in the temple or not in the temple or this or that. I mean, our temple, we had one devotee. His name was Vamana. He lived outside. He was a business person, ran his business, and he was second initiated. Most of the devotees in our temple weren't. So we had a Panchatattva picture altar, you know, that first initiates could worship. We didn't have deities. And so I think only the head pujari, the temple president, and his wife, I think they were the only ones that had second initiation. Everybody else was first or not initiated. And so every Sunday feast, you know, I remember at some particular point in time, he used to bring his deities and set them up on the altar. And then, you know, they'd be there for the Sunday program and make the offerings to them and all this and that. But, you know, one of the second initiated devotees would have to make the offerings. You know, so you have the rules of Krishna, but a lot of times the problem comes in the name of cooperation. We break down these laws of Krishna. They're not the common focal point. We doubt them. Do we have to do that? Do we have to do this? So you have to find something that there are the common values of pure devotion and then have to get to it. Then you'll have something common. And at the same time, it'll be individual. So when they say everyone's sitting on their own hill, why would you even notice everyone sitting on the... Now, if you have a person that when they were leading things, if they were leading things, then they find that, yes, we used to have this big, huge community of all so many temples and that. We used to do so many things together, a big festival. You know, we'd all go down to Almvix or something like that, or we'd come to the, you know, Stockholm and then have a program. You know, Harinam in Stockholm, we'd have the Janmashtami and Almvix, you know, and things like that. Great. But if they weren't in charge and that wasn't what was happening, then why are they making these points? Everyone's sitting on their own hill. Who are they to talk? Who are they to say that? You know, why would they notice everyone sitting on their own hill unless they're sitting on their own hill? You know, and they want everybody else to follow their hill. You know, if everyone's on their own hill, then be happy. You know, or if they have to cooperate, and who's following which hill? Who's the lead hill? You know, because in the Vedic, you don't have compromise. You have what's the principle between two details. There's two details. Let's say, how do you say? You want to accomplish something. And so you're doing it in your way, they're doing it in their way. And so then there'll be a discussion over all which is right and which is wrong. But the point is there's a principle by which each is done. And then that principle is what's the common between them. So the focus is more on the principles of Krishna consciousness. Then you'll find that as much as possible, details will be more common. I mean, I remember as we traveled around in the 70s, you know, the bus would go for different festivals and all that, that any temple we went to, it felt like home. It didn't feel different than our temple. Though the structure may have been different, who's in charge is different, the layout of the temple is different, you know, how they did. I remember we went to L.A. They didn't eat off of plates. They ate off of wax paper. They cut wax paper into squares, and that's what they'd serve prasad on, because then you just take it and throw it away. Our temple, we had bowls, and we used plates. You know, some temples, all the wash went into, you know, one thing was all washed and put into, you know, drums. You know, one drum for dhotis, one drum for kurtas, one drum for this, one drum for that. And you just, whoever's first in the morning, they get first prick. And whoever got up late, you know, then they get whatever's left, you know. And some places, no, they had their own stuff. Some places, you know, it was different in detail. But in principle, that everybody was, you know, getting up in the morning, going to Mangalarti, dedicating their life to Krishna consciousness, chanting 16 rounds, following the regular principles, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. That was the common things. And you'd also have common means, cooperate means, you know, you tell what you're doing and they tell what they're doing. You know, not a matter of just to find out facts, but, you know, hey, we came up with a new, I think someone was telling me one of the biggest things, because sometimes some devotees, temples would have trouble getting together enough funds. And so the Sunday feast, then making halva with so much butter, they didn't quite have the money. Then someone figured out how to cook halva with oil. And they found an oil that it would still come out nice. I don't know what oil it was. Maybe it was corn oil or something. And so that one devotee saying it's a big revolution in the society that now everybody, every temple always, and how much they need could cook halva for, you know, so many people. Like that. For the deities, they'd cook in ghee, but for the festivals, not many times, so it's not. So that these things are stuff that they just shared. You know, somebody comes up with a new technique in book distribution, it was shared, and others would try it, and if it worked for them, they'd use it. If it didn't, then they wouldn't. So cooperation doesn't mean we have to be doing the same thing externally. Cooperation means is that, you know, you see what's there, and what there is common, then you try to do. But yet, people have to be without their own agenda to try to get everybody to do what my temple is doing or their temple. So yes, people work together and all that, but it all goes. But one has to always remember, community includes the temples. There's this idea that communities without temples. It just means there's those who live in the temples, those who don't live in the temples. That's the community. So before we used to call it yatra. Now that, you know, it's more considered more cool to say community. But before it was called the yatra. And that could be just temples, just people living outside in the communities, or both. But it was called the yatra. And that was that group of people. They all worked together and everything like that. And how much was there? Because how many people can all show up at one temple? If you have 10 small temples, and that in one big temple, then for a big festival, yes, they can all come together at that one festival. But if there's 10 big temples, then how everyone will come? You have hundreds of people, like you were saying, Copenhagen there, they got 12,000 Hindus. But how are they all going to pack up and go to Rotterdam? You know, they'll all come there to the local. You know, so it's just, you just have to see what works. You know, what works and like that. And things develop. Like the, I don't know if it still happens there in Europe, but a lot of times, I mean, before at Nisringa Chaturdasi, a lot of devotees from all over Europe would go to the German farm, the Navajiyata Kshetra. You know, Prahlad Nisringadev's there. And they would go there for the festival. So you have hundreds and hundreds of devotees come. But other festivals you wouldn't have. You know, other festivals they do locally. So it's just a matter of what works. It's not that everybody has to do like this, but if it's something nice and it works for everybody, then great. So to say it has to be, everybody has to come together at one temple and not the other temples, or they should never come together. It's whatever works. Like we say, everyone goes from the Sringadeves there, you know. So that's it. I haven't heard of any other festival like Janmashtami. Everyone goes to this place or that place. So it works. The Goswamis, they had their puja in the temple. They had their Janmashtami program in their own temple, but they'd have it during the day. And at midnight, they'd all go to Govindaji's. But they were all there in Vrindavan. So it worked. So where that kind of cooperation works, that you apply it. But the difficulty is if we make the approach management, then it's always, okay, well, who's in charge? Who's in control of the money? Who's in control of the manpower? Why, if a temple comes, why does someone else have to be in charge? Just like if, let's say, you're at your temple and another temple comes to your temple. Why does this temple have to control the individuals in that temple? Why don't they just give, okay, that temple president comes with 10 devotees. Okay, and there's some service. Okay, what kind of services do your men do and this and that? This is what we have to do. So either the men can go off and individually work in different areas and that, then work under the local authority. Or it may be is, okay, we want to do this, you know, like say decoration. So you take your devotees and decorate the temple. So you just have to figure out what works. But the thing is, no, I'm in charge. I'm sitting on my hill. I want to be the hill that sits on all other hills. That's going to be a problem. So the point is all these different things have their validity, but we have to know where they fit. Yes, you have to cooperate, but what does that mean? Everybody shouldn't be so individual and separate that they don't do anything together. But the point is what does doing things together mean? You know, that we're all like now, people are doing things at their house, but they'll consider, we're doing this together with other people, even though they're sitting at their house. Right. So the point is it's just the mood is right. That they have that mood of camaraderie between the different devotees, then they'll work it out. But if it's always down to who's in charge and who the money and this and the men, then you're always going to have problems. Then people will tend to be separate. Does that get anywhere or?
Yeah, sure. Just clarifying. No, but I can just see that, you know, we have to, you know, things changes, you know, from a sonar chara set up with full-time devotees to, you know, communities with, so you have to think a little bit different according to time, place, and circumstances, what cooperation and unity means.
Yes, of course.
The message doesn't change.
Like what I'm saying now here to full-time temple devotees and all that, I would say the exact same thing if I was preaching to a community. Or if you sent me to the Indians, I'd say exactly the same thing. The examples might be slightly different and this and that. Like there I mentioned about, you know, Pink Floyd and those guys. I was talking to Indians. I'd talk about Amitabh Bachchan. You know, I'd talk about, you know, Shah Rukh Khan, that. But other than that, the message is the same. So thinking different just means you're able to accommodate, because before devotees were able to accommodate what was going on. Like devotees started off no book distribution, just Harinam. They do 8-10 hours of Harinam a day, 12 hours a day. Then BTG, you know, got together. They started having that along with the Harinam. Then the big books came out and they were doing, and then somebody, I think it was Bhuta Bhavan or something, he figured out how to distribute big books on their own. That was a big, uniqueness in the society. And then others started following, because otherwise they wouldn't do many books like that. So then, because people just focused on that. So the point is this, developing a community is still Samkirtan. That's the whole point. This idea that Samkirtan means just books, or Samkirtan just means making money. Samkirtan means the complete kirtan. It means all the aspects together. So community development is also Samkirtan. So it's just a matter of appreciating that, understanding that. And then you'll see is that it will develop. But if we take that it's something different, then, okay, we can't do what we did before. So what do we do different? Oh, therefore we go to the karmis, you know, and what do they say in their self-help books or, you know, in all these different books like that or their books on, and then does it, you know, are we them? Like that. So that may work for them in their position, but it doesn't necessarily work in another area, like the Amish, we talk about, oh, we're a community. Well, the Amish. Is there another Amish community any other place on the planet? Right? And, you know, are they somewhere else in America? No, they're just in Pennsylvania. Are they anywhere else? No. Any other state? No. Any other community? No. They're all Germans. The Mormons, they're out there in their place. It's not anywhere else. They send their people out preaching all over the place. You know, like that. And the fun part is they go out preaching in suits. You know, these are teenage college students. All in suits, every last one of them. They'll even come to our programs. I've even seen them come to a few of our programs. And then afterwards sit and discuss about God consciousness. They go in suits and they're one of the biggest growing movements in the world. You know, so this idea is, oh, people can't relate. Why? Everybody wears a suit? No. So therefore, but they always wear suits. So, you know, we wear dhotis. You know, people don't, Hare Krishna means dhoti and bald head. You know? So it's just what it means. And so then it works. People like to see something regular. You know, you see, you know, somebody, a Christian priest, you know, expect them to see him in his black with his little white collar. You know? You know, and if he's, I'm talking about Orthodox, they expect him to have a beard. You know, it's just the way it goes. And so there's not a problem with that, but we have this idea, oh no, nobody will find, sure, right? You know, if let's say at the university, let's say they were doing, you know, some, one module in their course where they were studying Buddhism and all that. And so somehow or another, he happened to be around in town, the Dalai Lama, and the professor then worked it out with the university and this and that, and they got him to come down and he'll speak and address the class and all that. Would everybody be cool if he showed up in jeans and a t-shirt, the Dalai Lama, or would they be disappointed? They expect him to show up in his robes with his bald head. So, you know, why would we be any different? So, The aspect is that it doesn't matter. It's temple. It's outside the temple. It's all Sankirtan. It's all part of the preaching. It's not different. Once I ask Radhanath Maharaj, do they have life members? And he says, no, we don't. We only have devotees. So whether they were in the temple or they were out in the greater community, they're just devotees. And so the devotees in the community come to the temple, the devotees in the temple, then, you know, they go out and preach in the community. And so it was very nice. They don't make that distinction like that. Yes, of course, temple devotees, that they're the ones that they're very serious, they're doing all day, and everybody respects that. But this thing is, no, this is the only lifestyle and everybody outside is Maya, or outside in the community, oh, we're being practical in that, and the people in the temple, you know, they're not being, you know, real. This is not cooperation. This is not Krishna conscious. This is not individuality. This is not understanding our philosophy, our culture, nothing. And it doesn't work. It doesn't create any unity. So Sankirtan means the whole thing. So developing communities, but who means in the community, all these communities around the world, how many are going out there and telling them things like, you know, how to wash your bum with water after going to the toilet, or the advantage of that, or being clean, or how to, you know, keep their, any of these kind of just traditional things that it means, it's not that that's the important thing. Main thing is chanting, but are they telling them anything else? How to cook, you know, cooking, how we cook, you know, for Krishna, how Prabhupada, recipes that Prabhupada gave us. Are these being propagated? You know, are people according to their nature, are they engaged? If someone, let's say, is a big manager, do we bring them in for a festival to help manage it? Or no, I'm the temple president, I'm the manager, like this and that, everybody's got to follow me. I once saw 26 Second Avenue. Went through the bend, Yeah, in the 2000s. Then early. So then the devotee was there because he was the president. You know, it's him and four brahmacharis. You know, because 26 Second Avenue is really small. We didn't have the apartment. So they had another apartment, right? Because that one in the back, Prabhupada lived in, we don't have. They had another apartment. They come down there every day, do the programs. And they used to do park programs. And the different devotees that would come to their program and all that, they would organize it. And he'd be there with the discussions. And I remember being invited to one of those discussions that, you know, there was a banker, there was a lawyer, there's doctors, other professional businessmen, this and that, all kinds of people. You know, there were six different people. And they would organize these wonderful programs. And the temple president would be there. He'd just see that what they're, he'd give ideas, what concepts he'd give. He would see that their ideas were Krishna conscious. But whoever thought up something good, it didn't matter if he was the doctor, the lawyer, the banker, you know, or the businessman, you know, or the president, whoever came up with the nicest idea, that's what the others would work on. And then some would come up with refine that and this. And they used to do really nice programs. So you don't have to make such a distinction, but you do have to know people live in their houses. So you have to go out. Even if you had temple devotees like Los Angeles, everybody lived across the street in all the apartments. They owned all the apartments across the street. And so the devotees lived there. 500 devotees lived there. So no one lived in the temple. Right? Even the brahmacharis lived outside. Maybe a few brahmacharis inside. They're visiting brahmacharis. There was an apartment for visiting brahmacharis. Yes. You're
Maharaj.
I see you're Star Trek, not Star Wars. So.
Udit Singh Prabhu, he has a question.
Yeah. Hare Krishna Maharaj, Dhanvat Pranam. Thanks for
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Okay. Maharaj, I have a question about the community development. So, how should grihasthas and brahmacharis should collaborate for this entire community development? Because, you know, and this question is particularly goes for newcomers who are into this movement. To improve their stickiness into the movement, how should we collaborate together?
Okay. Well, one thing is there is that new people, then you know, you're addressing new people, but you also have to cultivate those who are already there. Sometimes there's an idea that the only purpose of the Sankirtan mission is to preach to someone else, to get them in the Sankirtan mission so they can preach to someone else. But there's also, Lord Chaitanya says there's Jiva Doya, which is then going out and preaching to the wide range of people. But there's also Vaishnav Seva, in which you're associating with the advanced devotees. And then the whole point is then Namaruchi, you develop a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna. So, it's not just the new devotees. You also have to be who was already devotees. They have to be cultivated. And so the easiest thing is in cultivating the devotees that are already there, you invite the new people there. And if you need, sometimes you have programs just for new people. But once there's there, then they would attend programs of everybody else. Like that, you know? So that, and the brahmacharis then during the, like in Chopati they do is they, during the week they go out and preach in colleges and schools and evening in people's houses and all that. And the weekend then everybody comes to the temple. They don't generally do programs outside. Sometimes there's a lunch or some other programs, but the main programs are at the temple. So big festivals and it's not generally the temple or like that because they have space. Some temples around the world, they don't have so much space and they rent a hall and then do a big program there because the community is so big. You know, whatever works. But the point is brahmacharis are coming out and training in there and they're respected by the community and that. But you have to see it's not just about new people. Yes, you want to catch the new people, but those new people after time, they're not new people anymore. They're going to spend the rest of their life trying to become Krishna conscious. What about them? Like that. You have to organize events that they can take part in. You know, you have to do something and they just there. You know?
Okay.
You know, you get your needs. According to your t-shirt, you can go to the Chesapeake Bay, throw boxes of tea off the ships into the water, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Just in continuation to that. So for example, a newcomer is a grihastha family who wants to, who are aspiring to be part of this movement. So yes. How should we try to develop them? So how an existing Grihastha devotee and a brahmachari can collaborate together to develop a new Grihastha family who's coming?
It's just a matter of who's free to preach, right? It means it's whoever's free, they can be involved. It means these home programs, it means how many are there, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like in a city the size that you have there, you know, you could have be having 10, 20 programs a night. So you don't have that many brahmacharis. So they'll go to some programs or one brahmachari here, there. Grihasthas means, in other words, the senior devotees from the Grihastha community will also be involved in helping to organize and everything like that. And the brahmacharis will be taking part in these kinds of things. And then in the temple also, we see is that big festivals and big managers like that, that can much of the time be organized by the community. You know, the deity worship and that's carried out by the temple. They oversee that, and community members who are initiated can take part and do all the different things like that. So you just have to see what works. Chopati then, the Grihastha community is sees to finance and legal and all those things connected with the temple. The day-to-day management of the brahmacharis and deity worship, that's done by the those who live in the temple. You know? And then everybody preaches and like that. So everybody's involved. So the point is whether one's a Grihastha or a brahmachari doesn't matter. You're doing your service. You're doing as much as you can in the way of Jiva Doya, Vaishnav Seva, and Nama Ruchi.
Okay.
Right. You know, so if the Grihastha is better at giving the class, he gives the class. If the brahmachari is better, he gives the class. If Grihastha is better at leading the kirtan, he does. If not the brahmachari, or who plays the mridanga, who plays, it's just whoever, who cooks, it doesn't matter.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Maharaj, in relation to that, then also regarding counseling, what is the ethic of, like, for example, brahmacharis counseling? So is this something that is recommended?
It's not a matter of recommended. It's a matter of what they're doing. It means the brahmachari, see, Grihastha is trying to be Krishna conscious, right? So therefore, the brahmachari can advise them on the principles of being Krishna conscious, the importance of being Krishna conscious, of hearing and chanting and engaging oneself, and then, you know, giving, you know, relevant things from purports and that about, you know, how Prabhupada's recommending and talking about, and then showing the philosophy of that. He doesn't have to get into the detail of practical application, you know, especially if he doesn't have much experience. And then Grihasthas that are more mature can then talk to other Grihasthas on how to, you know, deal with little things like their finance or the wife or the children or, you know, all the different things, or in-laws, or, you know, all these kinds of things like that. Brahmachari comes from a background, he knows these things, he can say something. If not, then he just sticks to what he knows. But it's not because, you know, he's senior, therefore he tells everyone what to do. No, a lot of times these, you know, devotees who have been family members for so long, they know things that others don't. But it's not that, oh, he's uninitiated, so why would we listen to him? No, he's been a Grihastha for the last 40 years with the same person. And he hasn't, you know, they haven't killed each other. So therefore, you know, what is he doing in Grihastha life? So then he'll give some ideas. He'll give some, you know, what made his family life work. And then you put that into Krishna conscious context. And then now everybody can discuss it. So it's just a matter of know who you are, know what you can do, know your limits, and stick to that. Don't go beyond that. Like I remember once I was a group of, students, I think they were students in business. They were all business, you know, they were all doing their MBAs, I think. And they came, there were about like 20 of them and all that. And they wanted to discuss things about Krishna consciousness. So I got into giving a lot of examples in business and getting into a lot of detail. And at one point, one of them, who was kind of like the spokesperson for them, he says, no, you don't have to tell us about details in business. He says, we know how to do business. That's what we do. What we don't know is how to be Krishna conscious and connect our business to Krishna. That's what we want to hear about. Right? So that one has to know what we do as sadhus. We show them how to connect. Bhagavatam shows how to connect all the various branches of the Vedic knowledge to Krishna. that for specific, you want more detail, then that's another scripture. Manu tells you how to run the family, but Bhagavatam tells you how to connect the family to Krishna. So that's the point, is know who you are and what it is. Not that, oh, I have to be in charge of everything or in control of everything. Know everything. You know your limits. Know what you do. And stick to that. At the same time, as you can't have a grihastha saying, oh, you're not a grihastha, you don't know anything. It's things like that. If you're talking the principles of Krishna consciousness, it says, yes, we do. But practical application of it into their lives, then it may be other grihasthas who are successful in that, then can give ideas in that. So that should be also part of the things that those grihasthas that do have, then they should be able, but they have to be Krishna conscious. And then those who are very expert in it, then they can give direction. So you might have a younger person who's more Krishna conscious organizing the program, but some of the details that come senior grihasthas who may not be as advanced. Pointers, you know, on what makes it work. A lot of times these grihasthas in the 50s and 60s, they can tell you in one sentence how to make it work. So these sutras, then you can take, you can use like that. So it's not always that I think two or three times the best brahmachari instructions to a brahmachari who was having difficulty maintaining his brahmacharya, you know, whether he should get married, this and that. The best discussion, the best presentation, the best arguments, and the most effective in getting them situated back in their brahmacharya. I saw three times the point was being made by women.
By women?
Yeah. Like that. All three of them had a brahminical nature. So, you know, they'd be detached. But the point is women know who are brahmacharis and who are not. They can tell. Prabhupada says in the first canto, they have a sixth sense. Right? So Sukadeva Goswami runs by, they just sit there and continue their bath or offer prayers. So Vyasadeva comes running by, they get their clothes and put them on. They can tell. So the sixth sense. So they can tell who's a good brahmachari, who's not. So someone's a good brahmachari, they get distracted. Then they know how to explain to them like that. But as I said, I've only seen three of those in the last 40 years. So it's not that, oh, make the women in charge. Don't do that either. But my point is who has some understanding, some realization, they're the one who should speak. You know, whether it's the practical or whether it's also the understanding of the principles, you need both. So the point is the brahmacharis may be able to talk on the principles of grihastha life, and that, and you might have the grihasthas talk on details. But make sure that the details are in line with what Prabhupada says, not just their own idea. That okay?
Maharaj, since we're almost at the end of today's lecture, then I was thinking right. I would take minutes to prepare one for tomorrow's discourse. So I was hoping that Maharaj would speak on Vanashram, most on preparing and educating individuals for their respective ashram.
For tomorrow. Means not in the next 3 minutes or 2 minutes. You're talking about tomorrow.
Talking about tomorrow.
Okay. Very good. Yeah, because otherwise, you know, 2 minutes might be, you wouldn't get a complete overview.
So often we see that, for example, a young man will come and join the temple and spend a few years, and all of a sudden decide, okay, now I'm finished with this, and rush into grihastha life without preparing accordingly. And also
right.
Some people, they will just, yeah. Get married without actually understanding what is the grihastha ashram all about. And also,
okay.
Those
okay.
Ones, what are they getting themselves into and how prepare themselves for future renunciation?
Okay. Very nice. Okay, definitely. Okay. So that'll be tomorrow.
So So thank you so much, Maharaj, for enlightening.
Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much to all the participants. Hare Krishna. We look forward to seeing you all tomorrow.
Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Jai!
Jai Ho, Hare Bhagavan.